Before this episode starts, I strongly, strongly, strongly recommend that you check out the song Existential Blues by T-Bone Stankus. So go ahead, find the audio. It's definitely on YouTube. There's some live versions on YouTube, and I will put links in the show notes for those. So go listen to the song before you listen or watch this episode, and enjoy your welcome.
It's the dictionary. 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 It's the dictionary.
Hello, word nerds. Welcome to The Dictionary. Of course, it's a podcast show. It's also a YouTube show. And I am very excited to say that I have another guest on this episode. I'm just going to say his name is T-Bone Stankus. I'm not even going to say his real name because all of his emails have come from T-Bone. T-Bone, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Spencer. Great to be with you. And I just think this is kind of a novel idea here going through the... It's just, this should only take you about 10 years or so to do.
Oh, maybe 20 plus based on my math. right off the bat, because since I called out your name, T-Bone, where'd that come from?
Years ago, I was playing in a blues band called Fat Tuesday, and we were the house band at this club in Waterbury. And just before the Blues Brothers movie came out, we played there every Tuesday night, and then all the blues acts were coming through. All the guys that were in the Blues Brothers movie. John Lee Hooker, Matt Guitar Murphy,
nice.
Muddy Waters, all these guys, they were all coming through what they call the Chitlin circuit. And so it was a Wednesday night. There's 400 people packed in the club. We had just played the night before. And I was a music teacher. I just came out of a PTA meeting. I'm there in a tie-in jacket. And the owner's panicking because Luther Johnson, John Lee Hooker's backup band, didn't show up. Their truck broke down. So there's 400 people in the club. The club owner says, "You still got your sound system in your van?" I said, "Yeah." So we set it up, and he turned to John Lee Hooker, says, you want these two guys? It was just myself and my buddy Horace Williams, the lead guitar player. You want them to back you up? He says, "Sure, come on up, boy." So we both sat down on either side of Hooker. I played harmonica, just loosened my tie, played harmonica. My buddy played lead guitar. And at the end of the night, Barry Erickson, the bartender, jumped over the bar and says, "From now on, you're T-Bone Tom after T-Bone Walker." And Horace became Holland Horace Guitar Williams. So to this day, I call him Holland. He calls me T-Bone. And that's going back 75, 76, something like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember when the Blues Brothers movie came out. I want to say it was around 1980 or so. But yeah, I mean, definitely over 40 years, maybe pushing 50. You know, your emails are T-Bone everything. Like that's just your new identity now. Well not
it
new.
Was. You know, I mean, it was a silly name that stuck, you know. And we were white boys from the suburbs playing the blues, you know. So, I got to open for Muddy Waters and Hound Dog Taylor and Luther Johnson and Matt Guitar when he was playing with James Cotton Blues Band. So it was a real hoot it's like we're playing with our stars, you know, that people that we emulated from when our childhood listening to these guys. So it was really exciting. But
cool.
It just a nickname stuck, and you know, amongst blue, you know, musicians, we all just have nicknames. So
yeah,
you just got that way.
You can't force them either. It's like you can't say I want to be called this. It has to be a natural thing. Somebody else gives it to you.
No, that's Seinfeld.
let's talk a little bit about who you are and what you do. What's like one word that you would use to describe about who you are?
I'm a musical entertainer.
That's two words, but I'll take it. We can hyphenate it.
Yeah,
make it one word.
There you go.
There you go. Musician. That's it. That's one word.
Yeah. I would say more of an entertainer.
Yeah.
Because I use music as my vehicle to communicate with people. So, and I've been doing it full time. I just realized it full time, 52 years.
52 years full time. Wow.
Still doing
it. Which is amazing that you've been able to sustain a career in music for so long. That's a really, really hard career to do that. So that's impressive.
It's I changed a lot of hats.
And there you go. And shirts?
I started out as a folk singer. I played in the blues rock band. I did the comedy circuit all through the 80s because of my material on the Dr. Demento radio show. And then I just left the club scene back around 93. I didn't want to be around drunk people anymore. And I went full time with children. I went all over the country doing fairs and festivals all the way out to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I had a full size van and a van plus a trailer. And I would take the family and we'd go cross country and I do the fairs and festivals and schools and theaters. And then just this past December, I just said, you know, I can't jump around like I used to with the kids. And so I went full time, I've been full time, kind of transitioning over the past 20 years. And I work with people my own age, and it's 70s and up. So a lot of senior centers and nursing homes, things like that. So I still get to do my old clog act from the 60s with people who are my own age, you know, so.
Right. Yeah, you're playing those, you know, what we are calling oldies now. I would love listening to the oldies station with my dad, who's almost exactly the same age as you. And so that was my station when I was a kid, listening to the oldies. I love that stuff.
That's great.
Yeah. And you said you were a music teacher as well. What's that?
I was. I taught from 1972 when I got out of college, and I taught K through 8 music in a little town called Wolcott, Connecticut. And I had like 700-800 kids a week. And I had the energy at that time. I was doing 7 classes. I called it 7 shows a day. And then I'd work the clubs at night. And then, you know, come in and all, you just get a few hours sleep and go back to teaching. So after 5 years, I just found myself looking out the window a little more than the kids. So I left and went full time as an entertainer, and I haven't looked back. So,
yeah, amazing, amazing. Well, of course, we have to mention, you already hinted at it, we have to mention at least this one song that you created, which changed the world, I think, in a lot of ways, a world-changing song. it is called Existential Blues. But before we get into that, though, did you mentioned that it sounded like you did some other sort of comedy songs. Were there other ones in that sort of similar vein of comedy?
I did. I found a song. Somebody had played it for me. A musician from, of all places, Nova Scotia. His name is Leon Dubinsky, and he had a band up there. He had a song called "Working at the Wilco Manager Trainee Blues." When I learned it, the guy had Wilco went out of business, so my buddy transposed it to Kmart. I took it, and I'm the third generation of doing it. So Leon was a songwriter, and I took that on the Dr. Demento show, and I had Existential Blues Part 2. I did a country version of Prince's Purple Rain, I didn't change a thing. I just did it country, and it worked, you know. So and I had a bunch of other songs over the years that so I came out with a full album about 10 years ago of all comedy music that I did over a 10-year period with him.
Where can people find that? Is it available?
Right now I'm completely revamping my, I just sat down with a guy yesterday. I'm completely revamping my website. So give me a month or two. I'm going to have it all up on, look for Tom T-Bone Stankus. And, when you punch that in, give me 2 months. Give me 2 months from today. The website should be up. You can download the whole album or a particular song if you want. And so we're kind of redoing that now. I don't want to send. I was selling hard CDs there for years, and it's too much work to lick stamps and mail stuff. Yeah. So everything's going to be downloadable and available to everybody who wants it. So.
Excellent. Is there the chance that it's going to go up on like a Spotify or something like that too?
You know, I'm still learning this, yeah. You know, you helped me, as I'm an entertainer. I'm not a whiz when it comes to,
you're not an IT professional.
I'm not an IT professional. I just love to be in front of a live audience and see the smiles and hopefully make them smile. And that's where my forte is. When it comes to computers, I play a mean game of solitaire, and I can check my emails, and that's about it.
Hey, that's all you need. You got people to help you with that.
I got a young fella working on the webpage now.
yeah, exactly. I would need that too. So this episode airs in almost exactly a month. And so, you know, once your website's up, maybe a month or so after that, let me know. I'll update the link in there.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Of course. So briefly, we should probably talk about existential blues, a hard phrase to say. I think I want to hold off the majority of the conversation for it until we get to the last couple of words. But, you know, just quickly tell us, you know, a bit about where this came from and like what part of your brain were you accessing?
I think it's funny because I've seen comments on the different. If you go on YouTube, you can see different me playing in the colleges when I had a long mullet, when I had hair.
Oh, I saw that today. Oh, yes. I loved it.
And, you know, that's back around 84, 85. And people, there's comments underneath this is, boy, you know, this guy was really hooked on cocaine or something. I wasn't ever into drugs. So the funny thing, I'm just an adrenaline junkie. And I just love when I'm on stage, I kick into high gear. I talk fast. I perform fast. But where it came from, I was just getting ready to leave teaching after 5 years. I was really frustrated there. My girlfriend and I at the time were splitting. I had a manager who I had a 5-year contract, and we were going our separate ways because he got into Scientology, and that wasn't something I was into at the time. So it was just a lot of stuff. And if I had one more person, one more drunk come up to me at the bar and said, hey, man, what are you really into, you know? And it's like I had it up to here. And so I decided, you know, I'm going to write a song that sounds really profound and says absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So one morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I had to get up for get to school early for bus duty. And anything that came to my head, I had a pad and pencil. I just started writing things down. All through the time I'm on bus duty, all the little munchkins coming off the bus became the little people in my song.
Okay.
That night, I went out and did 3 verses of the song in a club. And it wasn't even a finished product. And I just said, you know, existentially speaking, this song doesn't exist. I'm not here. You're not here. So thank you very much. Good night. And I got a standing ovation. I said, what's this about? So every night I played that song after, people were requesting, play that crazy song. And it evolved on stage. And even the Dr. Demento 6 minutes and so many seconds, the live thing I did later was over 10 minutes. Mm. It just evolved on stage. I would throw a joke at the wall. If it stuck, people enjoyed it, it stayed. So it was completely stream of consciousness on working it out on stage, and it's always different. So
it is intense. It is amazing. I mean, I got that Dr. Demento collection, the 20th anniversary collection, when it came out. I was about 11 years old, I think, in like 91, give or take, and it blew my mind, just like everybody else's minds that were blown from this song. And it has stuck with me for years and years and years. And so I watched a couple of those live versions this morning. Oh, I did love the mullet. I have to call out the mullet again. And it's like, it's an opus. I don't even know what the right word is, but it's incredible. Obviously you have a whole other career that is unrelated to that. So quickly, I just have to ask, are you sick of it? Does it irritate you? What are your thoughts now?
I haven't played it in years because I'm not in that market.
Yeah.
Market I'm playing it right now. I go out with a duo, and that'll be at my webpage too, if you ever want to look that up. I go out with a duo. Instead of the Everly Brothers, we call ourselves the Elderly Brothers. We're both in our mid-70s, and we just go to senior centers and play 50s and 60s music. And we only pick songs with tight 2-part harmony, and like the Everly Brothers. And we do Roy Orbison and Elvis and the Beatles. And we're just laughing because it's the guy I'm playing with, Brian Gilley, incredible keyboard player and beautiful singer. And we just tried to, I've never played really lead guitar or anything, but we try to pick songs really tight harmony, and it's a joy to work. So that's what we're doing. So no, I haven't played that in years, but I still get people like yourself. It tickled me out of the blue, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you reached out. Yeah. And I said, you know, I had a guy from Germany and a guy from Athens, Greece, and people from all over the world writing me about the song. So, like I said, finally, after all these years of putting it on the shelf, I'm going to take it out, dust it off, and everyone can, if they want to purchase it, that's great. I still have 45. I think I have a couple hundred of the original 45s. I'm going to autograph and put them on sale too. So.
Can I get dibs on buying one of those? I will pay, of course. Wow. Okay, that's amazing.
So that's that's just another. It's not a market that I perform it at.
Of course, yeah. You're not playing at colleges like you used to. Although I do have to say, if you were to break it out at one of your elderly brother's shows, you might bring the house down, I think.
I don't know if they would. They would probably say, "Are you drunk?
Are you on cocaine?
Are you?" Yeah, so
right.
I don't think it'd work.
Yeah. Well, you know, similar ages. They might, you know, coming from the same generation, going through the same decades that you did. You might have a few.
Maybe down the road, if I could hit the high notes, it would be a blessing.
I was wondering about that. You hit some very, very, very high notes, which I was really impressed with. And I was wondering, can he still hit those high notes these days? I don't know. I guess you'll have to.
On occasion, I can. You know.
Yeah.
So no, it was a. I was always a music major and a voice. I did a lot of voice lessons, so I learned how to throw my voice into high falsetto, yeah, and sing there. You know, I mean, what the guy that amazes me is the lead singer for the Bee Gees, how he sang it and the high register, or all the guys that sang Motown. The lead singer, you'd think it's a woman, but it's a guy singing beautiful, pure falsetto. So I always try to play with that and throw my voice, you know, and just and it's a trick. That's all. It's just a vocal trick.
Lots of training. You're a very good singer.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll get to hear a little bit of that later if I throw you a curveball. But in the meantime, we will talk about some words. I read through the list of these words, and there's a number of these that I am not at all familiar with. So maybe you are, maybe you're not. I guess we'll find out, right?
Well, I think the show just ended.
Yeah.
We'll
you
see.
Don't exist. I don't exist.
No,
let's go home.
We'll see. Drive me out. Let's see. Where are we going?
Hey, let's have fun with this. All right. The first word is exigent. E-X-I-G-E-N-T. This is an adjective from 1629. And number one, it is requiring immediate aid or action. And the example is exigent circumstances. All right, well, number two looks similar. Requiring or calling for much. Much what? I don't know, just much of something. The synonym is demanding, as in an exigent client. It seems like it's just requiring a lot, needing a lot. We need this right now. Clients are saying, hey, I'm this exigent client. I need something from you right away. Is this a word that you have ever heard before?
No. But you know, so you said it's from the 16 what?
1629.
My father was a great writer. He wasn't a professional writer. He was a colonel in the Marine Corps, but my father loved to write poetry. He loved to write short stories with a little twist to them, and he just did it for fun. He didn't do it professionally or to get it published. But I was listening to a talk show as I was driving today going to work, and this guy was talking about how these kids are coming out of Harvard and Yale, they have no command of the English language. And it's, I think these cell phones have dumbed us down with how short can we talk with just syllables, you know, or just a couple of letters that stand for words. And how this one guy had his grandfather come over from Ireland. He had nothing more than a fourth grade education, but he wrote and spoke so eloquent. And we've lost the English language. I mean, you go back and read Shakespeare, people go, what the heck? But that's, and that Shakespeare was not highbrow. Shakespeare was not for the rich people. That was for the common man. That's a misconception. It's like opera was not for the rich people. That was for the common man. And to have the beautiful flow and eloquent words. I tried to read Moby Dick, try to get into that. And I mean, one sentence lasted almost a half a page. We would call it a run-on sentence. Yeah. There in those days, it was just beautiful, flowing poetry, words that you had to be a wordsmith, but everyone talked like that. And today, it's like we've lost that art, you know?
Yeah, you are absolutely correct. I mean, I think different countries deal with it in slightly different ways. But yeah, I mean, these smartphones, that's the sort of ironic thing about it, is that they're just kind of making us dumber in a lot of ways.
Actually,
I'm feeling the effects of that, which is, you know, part of why I like doing this show, because I get to read these words, learn these words. Most people don't read through the dictionary. I never have until now. And so I get to learn them. I'm not going to retain them because my memory is terrible. But, you know, I get a little view into what I'm missing out, the vocabulary that I don't have. So I appreciate learning things like this. But yeah, if you were to say, oh, that client is being so exigent, like, you sound so fancy and uppity, but you know, these are good words to learn.
Sure. I agree.
Yeah. Real quick, we can look at the etymology. It's from the Latin verb exigere or exigere, which means to demand. That's literally all it is. So, you know, it's just all about being demanding. I hope I wasn't too demanding on getting you on this show. I don't think I was. I think the first, I sent you an email. The email I got back from you was, yeah, sounds great. Let's do it. Perfect. Exigently is an adverb. So what I do after each word is I make a sound effect that is like, oh, we're transitioning into the next word now. I usually just make some sound with my mouth. But when I have a guest on, I like to ask, is there a sound that you can think of that we can use for this episode?
Oh, gosh. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Perfect. We'll just use that throughout the episode.
A man, a few words.
I appreciate it. Me too. Okay, so you made the sound effect, and I will now move on to the next word, which is exiguity. Exiguity. When I read this before, I thought it said exiguilty, but there's no L. Exiguity. Noun from circa 1626, so, you know, same time frame as the last one. This is the quality or state of being exiguous, which is our next word, but the synonym is scantiness. Ooh, okay. Well, because we hinted at exiguous, I think we got to move on to that one. So I will quickly make the sound effect, which is da 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 da. And we can change it up. We can have fun with it as we go. So, like I said, the next word is exiguous. And this one is an adjective from 1651. I always find it weird when the first word was 1626 and it's related to exiguous, but the exiguous word didn't even come into being until 25 years later. Okay, whatever. This word is excessively scanty, and the synonym is inadequate, as in, we have a couple examples, rest an exiguous existence from the land. So I think that's like you can't get much food, much water, much sustenance from the land because it's scanty, it's inadequate. There's another example, exiguous evidence. Ooh, in a courtroom. I'm sorry, judge, we do not have enough evidence. We have exiguous evidence. It is scanty. This is another one of those words that I've never heard of. What about you?
No, I think a lot of these words died in the 1600s when the folks in the 1600s died.
Yeah, I think so. So yeah, if you want to talk about something that is scanty or inadequate, It can be exiguous. I will say, since I got you on the show, your song Existential Blues is not exiguous in any way. It's not inadequate. It's full of just everything. It's got all of it.
And the kitchen sink.
Especially the kitchen sink. Okay. It is now your turn for a sound effect.
Oh.
And you can do the same one again.
No. that's all, folks.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Porky Pig. So this next word is exile, or just exile. First form. This one is a noun from the 14th century. 1A, the state or a period of forced absence from one's country or home. Can you think of any examples of people who have been exiled? There's only one that I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, Napoleon was exiled.
Dethroned,
and they exiled him to an island. I just finished a book about all people who were marooned and exiled to islands like Selkirk. And it was a true story. The guy was on an island. He didn't get along with the captain. They said, there's an island, you're going there. And he lived there for 9 years and survived very well. And from that, they made the book Robinson Crusoe.
And oh, interesting.
So it's a beautiful and incredible survival stories of people just said marooned or exiled. That's it. We're sending you there. John, the Apostle John, was exiled to Patmos. And he wrote the book of Revelations, the book of John for the Bible, and all that time when he was in exile, you know. So those are the two I know off.
Yeah, more than I know. I knew about Napoleon. That's about it. So 1B for exile is the state or a period of voluntary absence from one's country or home. So similar, but different. You're either forced away or you're going on your own accord. You're exiling yourself in that one. Number two is a person who is in exile. You just call them an exile. Napoleon was an exile twice. Didn't he go twice?
You know, I got me there. I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw that movie Napoleon, but it was like 3 hours long, and all I took from it was that he was just a terrible person, and I don't remember most of the story. Exilic is an adjective. Let's see. This word is basically just from the Latin word exilium, which means an exile. So that's it. Okay. Sound effect. I'll just do the same one that you did at the beginning. Blap. The second form of exile is a transitive verb from the 14th century. And this is to banish or expel from one's own country or home. And the synonym is banish. So just to remind myself, but other people, this is the verb. The first form that we read, that was the noun. So it's the state of being in exile, the person who is in exile. So that's the difference between these two.
Sure.
Any other thoughts on exile that you really feel like you need to talk about? I don't really have much.
No, I think it's funny that all these Hollywood actors and stars and stuff, they said, if so-and-so gets into office, and who we know who I'm talking about, I'm moving away, I'm moving to Canada or Europe, and none of them left. They didn't exile themselves. That's amazing.
Interesting. No, maybe
they're
too
still
much.
With I mean, us.
yeah. Well, I guess we'll see what happens later this year.
If they all left, then we wouldn't have the show The View, I guess, you know? So.
Right. Okay. It's your turn for the sound effect. Whatever you want to do. For some reason, the Zoom audio didn't pick it up, but I know exactly what you're doing. That's the Three Stooges thing, right?
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Just to have some audio, I'll do it. I have to put my microphone down, but I'll do it.
Do it for me, please.
I don't know if you heard it.
Oh.
I did it.
But we're doing great sign language. This one here is very ethereal. It's just strictly sign language. Okay.
Yeah. Well, this mic probably picked it up, so I'll have something. Yeah.
Okay.
Zoom, I guess Zoom doesn't like hand motions and claps. Come on, Zoom. Come on. Get with the program, Zoom. Okay, the next word. We must be so serious now. This is eximius. Eximius. Adjective from 1547. This is archaic, so we really don't know this one. The synonyms are choice and excellent. Eximius. I think we should bring this one back. This is from the Latin verb eximere, which means to take out. To take out. And there's more at the word example. Choice, excellent. How do you think you could use this in a sentence? Eximius.
Choice. You take something out. I would think someone stands out from the crowd, and we want to take that person, and they're not just part of that group. We're going to take them and put them up on a pedestal and present them as something really special, you know?
Yeah.
This person really has great qualities. They're not just run of the crowd. They are exemplary, you know?
Yeah, that, you know, the synonyms fit perfectly in that because they're choice and excellent, you know, choice meat, choice things, excellent person. Yeah, they would be eximius. I really like this one. I'll try to remember this one, but I don't think I will be. I think this podcast is definitely eximius for sure. Yeah. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. okay. Next sound effect. Oh, I like your Porky Pig. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. I'm going to do that one. That's all, folks. The next word is exine. Or exine. It's just E-X-I-N-E. This is a noun from circa 1884. This is the outer of the two major layers forming the walls of some spores and especially pollen grains. And it's grains, spores. I don't know anything about this world. Do you?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to.
I'm a fun guy, but not a spore.
not enough to know what exine is. Good. I'm glad that you got that in there. I had a little pin. You know, people are wearing these pins now these days on their bags. Lots of various little cartoony pins or something. I had one that said it was a mushroom, and it said I am a fun guy, and it fell off my bag, so I gotta go buy another one.
There you go.
Very sad. Okay. Sound effect time. They come up fast sometimes.
Okay. And you know, what is the purpose of the sound effects? I didn't ask you that. It's segues.
Yeah. It's a segue to say that word's done. Here comes the next word. Usually I'll just do the same one throughout the whole episode. So if you want to rehash one of the, wait a minute, hold up. There's a guitar coming out.
Okay, we're going to do the next one here.
Okay, unfortunately, the Zoom didn't like
that
one.
Oh, really? Did not pick it up. Oh, my goodness. All right. How about... All right.
I heard that one. There we go.
Gotta have
beautiful. Okay, the next word. Oh, this is going to be a fun topic. It's the word exist. This is a verb from circa 1568... I believe it is just an intransitive verb.
Wait. This is from 15 what?
68.
1568, and it still exists?
It's somehow. The word exists still exists.
This is incredible.
I don't understand how.
What? Go figure.
450 years, basically.
Oh, it's a classic. It's a classic. This has to be there. So
yeah, it's on all the collections, all the best of word collections. okay, number 1A, this is to have real being, whether material or spiritual. As in, this is an interesting example. Did unicorns exist? My one frustration on this example is there's no question mark. It just says, did unicorns exist? That's supposed to be a question, right? I don't know. What do you think? Did unicorns exist?
Yes.
I agree.
Believe it or not, it's scriptural. There's actual scripture that talks about unicorns.
And really?
The Old Testament. I don't know if it's in Genesis or But there is a, they talk about the unicorn and just mention it once and that's it. And I'm going, okay, that's kind of cool.
Interesting, interesting.
But they missed the boat when Noah, you know, they missed the boat, you know.
Yeah, yeah. They were off stabbing people with their horns,
who knows?
I guess.
Who knows?
There's another example, the largest galaxy known to exist. Just interesting ways to use this word. Okay, 1B is to have been in a specified place or with respect to understood limitations or conditions, as in strange ideas existed in his mind. Ooh.
I don't know anything about that.
No, of course not. Do you feel like your epic song is a little bit of a peek into your brain?
You know, it's in a way, because my father was a wordsmith. He just loved to play with words. You know, and he would sit down at the dinner table and my mother would say something and he would say, you know, that sounds like, and he would twist the word. And then he would look at my brother and my brother would add on to that. And then I would jump in and we'd all see it. And then my mother would throw her plate down and storm out of the room. She was so mad at us. But that's, it was always juxtaposition, always playing off a word. Someone says something instantly. That's how my mind works. I just think of something else, you know, or just a play on a word. You know, somebody said to me, Colonel, you know, somebody says the left wing, and I think Colonel Sanders, what a, you know, and that ended up in my song. But it was just words, you know, and first thing comes into your mind, it's like a Rorschach text. Yeah. Whenever you look at it quick, just say it.
Mm-hmm, and impulse.
Impulse, totally impulse. But I just love playing with words like that. So, yeah, I was brought up that way. So,
yeah, well, clearly.
Pray for my wife. I drive her crazy with that. So I'm always, and my friends, I'm always joking. You know, it's just.
Do you do a lot of puns or dad jokes?
Yeah. My very first joke I taught my son when he was 5 or 6 years old, we were coming in the house and my wife had a hydrangea bush out by the front of the front stoop of the house. And she had asked me to trim it. And my idea was to trim it right down to the ground and it'll come up. I didn't know with hydrangeas, you have to delicately clip it a certain inch from the pod. And, you know, so she was just horrified. She said, my hydrangeas. And I looked at my son. I said, well, I guess they're low-drangeas now. And that's his first joke. And he was telling everybody about the low-drangeas. And my wife was just so mad at me for destroying
Yeah, and here he is now laughing about it.
Yeah, it's just, you know, so
that's funny
because my wife's not here right now, so she's still at work.
Yeah. I have a coworker who loves, he's not even a dad, but he loves telling dad jokes and puns, and he'll tell them when we're at work all the time, and we all just groan, you know. They're, I appreciate them for sure, but, you know, we love to give him crap for all of his dad jokes.
Oh yeah, I love dad jokes. I think they're the best. The it's dumber fun. The better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, number two for exist is to continue to be. That is the definition. The example is racism still exists in society. And that is very true. Still, it just continues to be. That's not a topic I want to necessarily bring up in the moment. We're talking about the word exist, not racism, but yes, it still exists. We've made big progress, though. Okay, 3A is to have life or the functioning of vitality. As in the example, we cannot exist without oxygen. Yes, that is a fact. Can you... you know, just like you said, just a thought in your mind, just say it. The first thought in my mind was, how long can you hold your breath? How long can you exist without oxygen?
Yeah, really. Sure. You get the blues when you do that too long, you know, it's true.
Your face gets very blue. Yeah. Let's see, to have life or function, yeah, it's a kind of an interesting definition. But we've got 3B, which is to live at an inferior level or under the adverse circumstances, as in the hungry existing from day to day. They're just trying to stay afloat, but they are hungry. So, you know, lots of different ways this word can get used. We will quickly look at the etymology, which is from the Latin existere, which means to come into being or exist, which is from ex plus sistere, which means to stand or stop. That's interesting. And then from stare, which means to stand. So that's where it comes from. I want to ask some questions about what are your thoughts on like just existing in general, but we've got some other words that are related. I don't know. One thing I did want to point out, though, in the first definition, it said to have real being, whether material or spiritual. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, that's a big topic. Everybody's going to have different thoughts on material, this physical world, or spiritual. What do you believe, I guess?
Okay, well, I a lot of folks, is this, you know, it's going to be come from left field, but a lot of folks don't know about me is that I'm a born again Christian. So okay. I have a strong faith in existence, not only here. It's like, what am I going to do with my existence here? How am I, you know, if I do believe that Christ lives in me, how am I shining for him? Is my existence a positive thing for other people out there? And because of I place my trust in him and my faith in him, I know that I have eternal existence. So that when I'm no longer physically here. So there's two different ways of looking at that with existence. And so, you know, you always put your best foot forward. That's my motto. I love what you, that little thing, you can say it better than I can. You have it at the bottom of all your emails to me. Oh. And it's something about playing, and what's that about playing?
Yeah, we don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing.
That's it, you know, and I'm 74 years old, and people say, why don't you retire? And I said, why would I? Because I told my wife, I says, I was just, even before we were talking about any of these words or even you emailed me, you know, a week or two ago, I said to my wife, I says, you know, I love my friends. I love to have a good meal, and I breathe air. And I said, and I sing. And that's all part. If I wasn't singing, I wouldn't be me. So I will keep going until the arthritis completely takes over, or I can't. But somehow I'm going to keep, you know, make a joyful noise, or I'll keep croaking, you know, with my voice. But it's just, you can't stop. I have friends that they look like old men because they say, I'm retiring. They put their feet up on the couch. And a few years later, they're gone because they let go of life. You know, what a waste, you know? Yeah. So
I totally agree. I feel like, you know, I've had that thought of retirement since people start asking that when you're young. And I'm like, why? If I'm doing the stuff that I like to do, why would I ever retire? Yeah. I feel like retiring is from the thing that you have to do for your job just to make money, but it's not the thing that you love to do, which is why I guess a lot of people do when they retire, they pick up hobbies. But like you said, a lot of them just sit, they become inactive, and that's when a lot of physical problems start to come up. So yeah, I'm pleased to hear that you are just going to keep on going as long as you can.
Oh gosh, two of my heroes were George Burns and Bob Hope. They went until 100 years old. And I says, and if you ask them, they probably say the same thing. Why? You know, in my head, I feel I just had my second knee operation a week ago. In my head, I'm 16 and I'm still looking for the next adventure. Now, like I said, I've changed so many hats in this business and so many different varieties of music. I mean, I'm a song leader in a Baptist church on Sunday mornings and Wednesday nights. And that's a completely different thing, doing gospel music. It's always fun, you know. I'm always looking for a new creative way to reinvent what I do. And because I just can't stop, you know, it's just too much fun.
I love to hear that. You are going to exist for a very long time. Okay, moving on to the next word. If I remember, I'm going to sing your guitar riff. If I remember it, was it dum 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 dum?
Yeah, you got okay. it.
Here we go. The next word is existence. So, you know, a different form of the word. This is a noun from the 14th century. Number 1A is obsolete, and it is reality as opposed to appearance. Wonder how that used to get used. Reality as opposed to appearance. Well, 1B is reality as presented in experience. And I feel like my brain has already stopped working on these definitions. It's like such an esoteric world, kind of, but it's really fascinating.
I think it, you know, if I can interject, if listening to the first part of that, an inanimate object just sits there. It doesn't have any life to it except what we project upon it. Like you can look at a painting and we project our thoughts and emotions on that painting, but it's just a canvas with oil on it. But it's not breathing, living, existing. I think of something that has life within it, you know. So that's the difference, I think, when you talk about reality versus an inanimate object. So,
Yeah, I like that. We've got more. We've got 1C1 is the totality of existent things. All of the things that exist is just existence. Literally everything out there. Let's start counting. 1C2, this is going to be related, I think. A particular being, as in all the fair existences of heaven. That is from John Keats. I believe it's Keats. That is a quote. Just any being, anything, or just all of the stuff is existence. What a big topic. Here we go. We've got 1D. This is sentient or living being, and the synonym is life. So I guess if you say that you have life, I have life, we have existence because we are these sentient beings. I was going to hold this question for later because, you know, we're going to get into the existential world, but one of those existential questions is what is life? What is this thing that makes this body go? Is there a soul? This is the stuff that I think about all the time. What are your thoughts on that? I'm curious.
Oh, I believe that this is just a shell that you're looking at right now. This is my physical shell, and the being that's within me is going to live on. And it's just, you know, my faith tells me where I'll be, and that's heaven. And and it's just, and I can't wait to, you know, find out who shot JR and right. all the mysteries that we, you know, how did this happen? How did that happen? And all the things that we just didn't know about. I like to think there's a big projection screen and we're going to see everything that happened. But I just zoned there for a minute, but
me too.
But no, I don't think. I think we, again, when you stop being that little kid inside, that's sad. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you wanna create. Don't people say my glass half full or half empty? I say my cup's overflowing because that's how I feel about it. You know. And if you don't have that little kid excitement about Christmas, you know, or about that present, you know, then you lose creativity, you lose your imagination. And some people think that if I'm looking at you right now, I'm looking at the screen, that you're just a figment of my imagination. But I don't believe that. You know, I like to use my existence to communicate. And so when you asked me if I wanted to be known as a musician with one word, I would say more of an entertainer because I use my music to try to make that connection. And hopefully that's going to be a positive thing. I did it in my younger days, a lot of angst, of playing rock and roll, and I was going to be a star, you know, and I'm going to, and you're going to love my music. And I had a scowl on my face, and I'd be rocking and rolling and breaking strings and just going crazy. And, that wasn't really making it made an impression, but not a connection. So when I realized I put the people, my audience first, and then I just say, how can we relate? And then just have a great, I love the spontaneous we're doing now.
Yeah. 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 When you say that just a musician, I'm just sort of adding on to what you were already saying. When you say you're just a musician, that just means you're playing music. But when you're a musical entertainer or a music entertainer, that word entertainer brings in so much more. It automatically connotes, like you said, a connection with the people. You are providing entertainment for those people through the music and through your comedy, through your banter, whatever it is. So yeah, I just you know, wording it in another way for my brain, and I really like that.
I interject something here, and that's that I had an agent, God rest his soul. His name was Doug Tuckman. He was out of Brooklyn, New York. He had me going all over the country, doing fairs and festivals and theaters, and unfortunately had a sudden heart attack. But he was a real mensch, a really great guy, and Doug, he would watch my shows, but he would give me little critiques, and sometimes my ego didn't want to hear, I could have done this better. I could have a standing ovation from a crowd, and he says, yeah, but you didn't do this. And one of it was this little girl in the middle of my show. I had my routine. I was doing this children's show at a big fair down in New Jersey, and the crowd's really into it. And he says, this little girl came up to the stage and she was like pulling on my pant leg, you know, and I'm trying to, hi, sweetheart, you know. He said, take the time. He said, you could have just got down on one knee and talked and just stopped the whole show and talked with her. And I said, you know, you're right. What am I doing? I'm getting myself all worked up into this, you know, turn this machine on, do my bit. And that's not communicating with people. That's just full steam ahead, in your face. But so now, anytime I'm singing a song, I'm watching my audience, and I'm watching out of the corner of my eye, and I see this person here or that person, and I will stop in between songs and talk to that person, and say, hey, you know, you're about my mother's age. What kind of song do you want to hear today? You know, and make those connections. It's like I try every chance I can to stop. Get out of me and get into them and let them, let, I've had the spotlight most of my life for what I do. So a guy one time said, I love your show. You existential blues. You do this, you do that. I said, what do you do for a living? He says, oh, I'm just a taxi cab driver. I said, wait a minute. You've got some great stories. You got to tell me. And then for the next 15 minutes, I let him have this light and I let him shine. And you know, it's just that's what it's about for me. You know, after every show, I don't care if I played all the songs I had on my set list. I, you know, if we had fun and we connected, that's all it is.
Yeah, it's all about the connection.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, that's great.
That's just the way I roll. Other people perform differently. That's okay.
Yeah, no, but I like that. I like, you know, and I get, like, you know, when you're in the midst of something, you know, your brain is so focused on that, you're gonna miss, you know, the little girl tugging on the pants. Not that you're gonna miss it, but you're not gonna think like, ooh, I should interact or something like that. You're just, I've got a thing to do. I've got my routine. But yeah, I like you. You're breaking it up a little bit and making them feel special and bringing that interaction.
Yeah,
sure. And then it's not really a staged thing. It's become, because I've done it for so long now, because a good friend corrected me when Doug told me that. He says, you missed an opportunity. And I said, you know, you're right. I went through this whole thing of full steam ahead with my routine, and I missed the opportunity to just breathe and connect. And now it's like, that's the way I roll. I don't have any set list. I'll just go out, see my audience, and read about how old they are, about where I'm at, you know, what song I'm going to play next. As I'm playing one song, I'm thinking two or three songs down the road. or I'm going to interject this joke because I see this the way this guy looks over here. He's a farmer. I got a good farm joke for him, you know, and try to get him in, and you know, so it's that's all. I'm babbling here. I'm sorry.
No, I like it. I love to get the little nuggets of your life, you know, because we've just met, and especially the things that are going on in your brain. I love hearing that from new people, anybody, especially. Yeah, that's great. Well, we will now go full steam ahead. We got more definitions. This is the most fun thing to do, just to read dictionary definitions. I think yes, we left off at 2A for existence. This is the state or fact of having been, especially independently of human consciousness and as contrasted with non-existence. Oh, boy. I don't even know how to respond to this stuff. We have an example. The existence of other worlds. Other worlds existing. Those could be metaphysical. Those could be literally exoplanets. Planets in other places. Well, we got 2B. This is the manner of being that is common to every mode of being. What? The manner of being that is common to every mode of being. Can you parse that out?
Just say the first part again.
The manner of being that is common to every mode of being.
It's a circular thing, you know.
Yeah, kinda.
That's why I'm hearing it, and it's your mode, your mode of being is like in everything you do. It's just existing.
I wish there was an example that could sort of put it into some sort of better context, you know. Well, 2C, this is being with respect to a limiting condition or under a particular aspect.
That's kind of pigeonholing, isn't it? You know,
you
can only exist in this particular way that we want to view you or whatever. I don't know.
Right. Being with respect to a limiting condition or under, just in this little area. Okay. Number 3 is actual or present occurrence, as in existence of a state of war. So it is, yes, it is actual or present. That war is actually happening. It is occurring. You know, we got a lot of that going on in the world right now, and that makes me sad.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's, my pop was in the thick of it in Guadalcanal during the South Pacific in World War II, and he said it was just dirty business. That's all it was. And he says he had a saying that he would say with his buddies every morning they wake up to go on patrol. He says, "Big business, quick decisions." You know, and that was just, you know, and they never thought they were going to come back at the end of the day. That's how they lived. That's how they just could move, put one foot in front of the other to overcome the fear, because once they've been in a few battles, it's like they become just fatalistic about, you know, we're probably going to buy the farm today. Let's just do what we got to do and get it over with. And that's a sad way to be. But, you know, he said, it come to Vietnam, I tried to join the Marine Corps to go over, and I got rejected because of my eyes. And I was sad about that, but my father said, "Good." He said, "I don't want you in this war because it's just dirty business." And he says, "Nobody should have to go to war. You know, it changes so many people's lives." And so he was he came back a very gentle giant. He was always on a pedestal in my life. But he never pushed that. He said, "Just because I was in the Corps doesn't mean you have to be." And there's just too much senselessness of the whole thing, you know, and the big guys in government, the big guys smoking the cigars, start the wars, and then the young farm boys have to go fight it. That's ridiculous. Yeah. It's a waste. Yeah. And that's not natural.
right. War is this weird thing. Well, they were definitely questioning their existence when they were over there, and glad he made it out, and you were able to have a relationship with him.
I feel very blessed. Yep.
Yeah. Can you please make a sound effect? It's that time of the show.
Ooh, let's see here. I don't know we're going to be doing this. So let's see. How creative can I be here? Let's see. Is that another Three Stooges?
I don't know what it is, but that's definitely, yeah. I'm going to redo that because again, Zoom didn't pick it up, but
you go.
My dad and I would do that. We would do like the William Tell overture with our cheeks.
That's Let's classic. See.
I don't know if you heard it, but
no,
it's always
but it,
fun smacking
I
your face. It,
I could hear, I could see what you were doing. I said, I don't.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, the next word is existent. Adjective from 1561. Number one, having being. And the synonym is existing. So if you just have a being, a something, you are existent. Number two, existing now. And the synonym is the word present. Just think of like a teacher taking the roll call and asking if the kids are there. Like, are you existent? Yes. Yes, teacher. I am existent now. I am existing here right now. Thank you. The example there is existent methods of flood control. We need more of those. Existent is a noun. And yeah. And now begins the part of the show where we get into some very interesting conversations with some definitions and some questions. I'm going to do a sound effect. I'm going to go, puppies, puppies, puppies.
Very well done. Very thoughtful. Very thoughtful.
Yes, I put a whole lot of thought into that one. I wrote that for days.
I can't imagine where that came from.
Yeah. So our next word, of course, is the word existential, which I just love this topic anyway, because the existential questions that people have, I think, are great. And then, of course, for you being here, we've got more questions. So let's read the definitions and we'll see where this goes. Existential, adjective from 1693. Number one, of relating to or affirming existence. And the synonym is existential propositions. Affirming existence. So existential is just like, yep, that thing exists. That student is in their seat. That's one way to use existential. 2A is grounded in existence or the experience of existence. And the synonym is empirical, like you are observing something grounded in existence or the experience of existence. And I can't help but think, like, everybody has their own experience, their own experience of existence. You know, you have had this wonderful life. I have had a whole totally different life, so this is all. It's all about our own existence, right? Existential. We'll keep on going. We got 2B.
I gotta go back to the very first one we were saying about a student sitting in their chair. They exist there. When I was a teacher, there were moments when I would see them sitting there, and I'm going, "They're not there. They have totally tuned me out." They're in Idaho right now. They're not in that seat listening to me as a teacher. You know, so.
Yeah. That physical body is there. That mind is.
No, they're gone. They're gone.
Who knows? Yeah, it's very true. Very true. Okay, so 2B for existential is having being in time and space. I mean, what can you say about that? Having being in time. Well, we are all. You know, if we're alive. We have a being, I guess, and we are at a specific space, in a specific space at a specific time. Your time is an hour ahead of my time, but somehow it's the same time.
Yeah. very, very linear. Yeah. You know, and some people say that you read about people who've had near death experiences that just time is, they realize is, doesn't exist.
Right.
They just exist and they're taking it all in and going, wow, this is great.
Yeah.
Or wow, this is scary. However, which way they go up or down, but the concept of time is not there, you know. Right. And they said, oh, you were dead for 20 minutes. And I go, they come right back into their body. You know, it just felt like a second, like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Or an eternity,
like days, you know, whatever, you know, but vice versa. So
yeah, yeah. I find those near death experiences so fascinating. Really interesting stuff. Just the last one is number three. The synonym is existentialist, which is in the next episode. So that's just one who I guess is maybe studies existentialism, which will be our last word. Existentially is an adverb. But real quick, let's ask some existential questions. If I can find my document that, it's down here on this monitor here. Let's move it over. You know, you said that you were not one who was doing drugs in the early days, but I have to imagine that you have had these thoughts, you know, like let's find a good one. We already asked about, like, what's this thing that makes you live? What is death then? Do you think that life is determined? Or anything is determined, or do we have free will? That's always a fun existential question.
I believe in free will. I have to live with the mistakes I've made over the years. And I look back and cringe. And then I said, all right, I got to keep looking forward to the fries and look forward. And you can't dwell on the past, you know? So I think everyone will have, anyone who says they've never had regrets of things they said or did, you know, we've all had, I wish I hadn't said that to that person or did that or whatever. And we've all had that, but you just got to keep, pick up and keep moving on, you know, and what are you going to do where you are now and moving forward? You can't let this, that anchor hold your leg down and drag you down. You just got to let it go.
Yeah. And don't dwell in the past. Keep on moving. Keep on going forward.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see, any other, what are some existential questions that you like to think of or have thought of in the past?
Oh, golly. I joke about the big television screen in the sky. I would love to know all this conspiracy theories. I love history. So I want to know. Who really was behind John Wilkes Booth's, he shot Lincoln, but what was going on with that? I love Civil War history. I could tell you where I was in Mrs. Williams' seventh grade English class when Kennedy got shot back in 63. And I could tell you exactly when it was happening. I heard it over the announcement, over the speaker, and I would love to know, you know, all these. I'm sure it was a lot of folks involved, but you know, stuff like that. So I just love, you know, the trivia history. You know what happened here. I would love to see how things really went down. You know,
sure.
And see other things in history that happened. And that's one of the things I like to think about someday being able to see all that. But not right. that it really matters, but. Yeah.
No, but you know, but having that knowledge is, you know, oh, that's cool to know that. Yeah. So like maybe when you die in 55 decades from now, because you exist for a very long time, you will be able to have all of this knowledge of these things that you didn't know about.
And you know, I don't mean to, I'm not trying to be proselytized, but scripture says that when you meet God face to face, you'll know everything. And not right. that you're going to be God, but he's going to give you that indwelling that you're going to know, oh, okay. You know, it's just, oh, that's, you know, so, but, and that doesn't spoil. That's not a spoiler alert. I think it's kind of cool.
Because you mentioned JFK. I don't know if you're aware, there's a really interesting book called, I think it's just called 11, 11/11/63 or something like that. I think I have the date wrong, but it's the date that JFK died, and I guess it's sort of a time travel story. And so if you've never heard of it, I think you should check it out. I want to say it's Stephen King, but I can't remember who exactly wrote it. I'm going to look it up real quick, but it's a really, they made a, I think they made a limited series of it as well. Oh, 11/22/63. Yeah, it's from Stephen King. So it's not like a horror thing or anything like that, but.
Yeah, that's fascinating. You know, and it just, again, I just have always been a history nut ever since I was a kid. In fact, we used to drive my parents crazy because we'd be driving along and I'm like 8 or 9 years old. And I thought we're driving by a museum. I said, we got to stop it. It says realistic. She said, no, that's real estate. So, you know, Tommy has dyslexia. So, you know, that's one of those things there. So I always was fascinated. My folks would always, we'd go camping and we'd go up to Fort Ticonderoga in upstate New York. And I was fascinated with the French and Indian War. And then we'd go down to, you know, Mount Vernon and learn about history, you know, with my father would be stationed in Quantico, Virginia. So we'd do all the Civil War battlefields. So anything like that, it's just fascinating for me. But I'm way off on a tangent here. I'm sorry. Well,
no, so that's good. Like, so just like, I guess one last existential question is like, you're so interested in those things. What do you think it is about that, that like struck a chord with you? That's kind of an existential question.
Yeah. It's just, fascinating how it's all a puzzle and how all the pieces fit. My last name is Stankus. That's Lithuanian. If you look it up in a dictionary, it's Polish. And that's because Poland and Lithuania had a 100-year war where the borders were going like this. And mm-hmm. so in essence, the shield of the word Stankus is a Polish seal, a shield, I should say. But yet it's the most common last name in Lithuania. It's like Smith. Oh. So, you know, that to me, that's like, how did that happen? You know, and then my grandparents would tell me, well, the border went like this and then the war happened and that happened. And so that's kind of fascinating how, it's a domino, you know, during Vietnam, we talk about the domino effect. It's going to all of Southeast Asia is going to fall if the communists come into Vietnam. But everything leads to something else. It causes something else. So I just like to see how it all plays together, how it all fits together like a puzzle.
Yeah, definitely. I feel because we have just finished the word existential, I should probably, for my own knowledge, ask you some questions about your song, Existential
Sure.
Blues. Let's see. Well, so you already sort of answered about sort of how long it took. I mean, you said that you did like three verses after the first day or so, and then it just sort of grew and grew over a period of time. So it wasn't like you sat down and just wrote the whole thing.
Oh, gosh, no, it was totally anything that came to my mind. Someone told me what I had done, and I hadn't even known that it was called a tone poem. And I think you and I were talking about it the other day. A great tone poem is Bob Dylan's Subterranean Homesick Blues. Well, mama's in the basement mixing up the medicine. I'm on the pavement thinking about the government. A man in a trench coat said he got laid off. And it's just like all these, this what seemed like this junk things are just flying around. And one word is connected to the next word, connected to the next word. And so I didn't plan to do that. That's just the way it came out. Any word that came to me, I'd either rhyme it or I had a word association that had, you know, totally absurd associations. And it just, because again, I just, people, you know, everybody was into transcendental meditation and drugs and philosophies. And I got tired of, you know, what are you into? And I'm going, I'm just into being, you know? It's like, why do we have to be into anything, you know? So I just got tired of it, and I just wrote anything that came to my head and threw it at the wall and said, take that.
Yeah.
Where did the Wizard of Oz thing come from?
I was on bus duty.
You mentioned that, yeah.
And the kids are coming off the bus, and they became the Munchkins, you know, just in my head, my word association.
And then you just went with that, you know, talk about the big green building, and there's a dark forest, and there's a witch. And it's like, so that was just like, well, if I'm going to talk about the Munchkins, I'm going to logically go to the rest of the story, basically, right?
And it's as we're talking, I keep, this thing is getting very long for you. I apologize, but that's how I love to talk with people the old days, we call them BS sessions, sitting around the campus, you know, in the college dorm. And just whatever came to my head at the time, it just tickled my fancy. And I'll throw that in there, you know. And it evolved on stage. And then after I recorded it in 80, I kept doing it on stage in colleges. And what, a 6-minute song became a 10-minute song. I just kept Mr. Rogers ended up being in there, you know. And you know, how did that happen? I don't know. Just one night, Mr. Rogers was there in my head, and he just ended up on the song, you know. So,
and so when you found something that stuck, it just stayed in that version, and then it was
just stayed in there, and then I would just add on to that and expound on that, and
yeah. Do you know the last time that you performed it? Are you aware of what, like, date or location that was, or year even?
I think, believe it or not, I did it at a church coffee house. And somebody asked me to do it, and I said, do you realize what the song is? They said, we know you're a Christian, and we know you have this whacked out song. We want that. We want to show who you are, the completeness of you, you know? And I said, okay. And that's going back 25 years ago. I did it at a Christian coffee house, and people came to see me do that song. And I did a bunch of other comedy songs. I did some bluegrass gospel. I love bluegrass. And it was a whole hodgepodge of stuff, but a lot of comedy and a lot of stories.
Yeah, that's great. The end of the song is, I guess, right before you get to the end, the whole thing is about the searching for the meaning of life. That's sort of a through line through part of it. And you get to what I guess could be the punchline, which is, I'd rather have this bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. Sorry to spoil anything for anybody. It's been out for a while. You had mentioned that you love the idea of making something sort of seem important, but it really means nothing. And was that part of that?
Yeah, it's part of it. But that line is an old line from vaudeville. That's an old. I don't even know who did it. I don't know if it was Jerry Lester, the baggy pants comedian who was in vaudeville. But it's an old vaudeville joke. I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. And that's where that came from. I just said, yeah, I'm going to take that.
Yeah.
Hey, that might as well be a good meaning of life. Sure.
I was just goofing on I call them the old wowers. I had a guy one time, he was an Ivy Leaguer, and he was at a restaurant that I was performing at. And I got a standing ovation from the people. I said, I'll be right back. I'm going to take a short break. We'll come back with another set of music. I ended the first set with Existential Blues. And this guy says, oh, Tom, could I talk to you? And he's trying to impress to his girlfriend what an intellectual that he was. And he says, I failed to say, you know, I was listening to your song. I think you're actually talking about imperativism. And I said, wait a minute. I said, this is just a song, and this is the goof. I said, it doesn't mean anything. His girlfriend was on the floor laughing, and he was like, up. He got all flustered because I said, look, you're taking yourself too serious, man. This doesn't mean anything, you know? And that was the whole, I got a kick out of it. Princeton University had a group of kids who called themselves the Existential Blues Society, and they had their own club. I mean, I thought that was a hoot, you know. So
yeah.
Oh, that's great. I love that they did that. I just have a couple more quick questions.
Oh, please,
about it.
Please.
I find it amazing because my first experience was the recorded version. I find it amazing that you were able to perform this live with the delay effects and everything. And so I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about how you were able to do that.
I had a group of friends, maybe four or five friends who came in the studio with me. They were my munchkins. I said, when we do the Follow the Yellow Brick Road, you're going to sing your, I don't care how funky it sounds, you're going to do your thing. And I had honed the song so long on stage. You know, that's, I like to really, before I go into a studio to record anything, I like to really play it live and make sure that it's cemented in my head, you know. And then I have a Roland chorus echo, and it's an old tape loop machine. And I had a friend of mine, Bill McKenna was would be my sound man. He'd go out live with me and do all my lives, set up my equipment and do the board. And he would punch the button in at the right time. And he was just Johnny on the spot. Perfect. You know, years later when he couldn't go on the road, and because he was still a teacher also, and he couldn't, if I started traveling far distances, I finally got a little push pedal with my foot. And I was able, some of the ones you saw me do in the colleges upstate New York, you know, 4 or 5 hours away. And I would use the foot pedal with the Roland chorus echo, and it just timing it. That's all.
So the foot pedal, you would hit that, and it would cue the
poppies.
Right.
Echo.
Did you have to set it to like a certain time, a certain amount of seconds or milliseconds or something, or was it preset? You didn't have any control over that amount of delay.
Oh no! It was the Roland chorus echo the predecessor to that was the Space Echo, and if you look it up, these are fun. It's still, believe it or not, this thing I bought for $700 is worth like $4,000 now on eBay. But the Roland chorus echo was a continuous loop tape, and you can do different settings. I can go hello, 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 or I could do it hello, 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 hello. You can change the speed,
dial it in,
because there's like five or six different tape heads. So the distance between each tape head, you can shorten it or make it longer. The delay.
Yeah.
So that's all. That's all the magic. And I also had a lot of reverb. So I'd hit a reverb pedal and make it sound full and fat, you know.
Yeah.
Just,
and so
very, very simple.
You're very fast. And you know, with, I'm sure you had that foot pedal in the videos that I saw. You were very fast at turning it on and off, because sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't.
And that was just, again, like writing the song, the creative, how am I going to start and stop this thing to make it, to get a cool effect, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I had this thing where I had this long high note that I'm hitting, and it's like a swirling thing coming up, and it's crescendoing and coming down, and suddenly dead silence, you know. And that was a just a little trick to, you know, to juxtapose what I was doing, you know. And
that's
just like wordsmithing, you know, just playing around with it. That's all, just playing around with sound effects. So
Is there anything in the song that you feel like hasn't aged very well, or do you feel like it's pretty good? Obviously there's different versions, you know, there's before the recorded version, the recorded version, post versions. And, you know, I've only seen a few of those. So I'm curious
what your thoughts are.
I had, gosh, I had verses that, you know, I had originally written and just trashed them. No, it just did. It was topical, you know.
Yeah, timely.
I'm marching. You know, I forget what the line was, but just certain timely things that go. Now this isn't gonna stretch out, because people are gonna they're not gonna see the movie reference I was talking about. Not the Wizard of Oz, but another movie that Sally Fields and Norma Rae. It was a movie in the late 70s, you know, so it was a comedy thing, play on that word, but no, that's not going to last long, you know, so.
Right. Pop culture-y things. Yeah. The recorded version that ended up on the Dr. Demento show, was that all in one take then?
All in one take. Boom. You know, it just, there was no editing. It was all live to two track. Boom. That was it. And we didn't have to play around it at all. So we just caught it. We were very fortunate, you know.
It is an astounding piece of work. I'm sure that I know I would. Part of my fantasy would be just to like sort of go through it line by line, but that's not going to be fun for anybody. But you know, it's just, there's just so much in there. I find it so fascinating. And when I was in high school, I started writing a song, and I'm not a songwriter. I've done music, mostly saxophone, when I was younger. Can't play the guitar, can play the piano a little bit, but I started, you know, a song sort of just started coming to me a little bit. And so you're giving me some new inspiration to sort of come back to that. And like one day I just sort of sat down, kind of like what you were saying, it's just sort of like off the top of your head, just like where does it go? What's the tune? What are the words? And I started sort of throwing all this stuff together, and I have it in a notebook somewhere in storage. I don't know where it is, but I've got it somewhere, and I'd love to dig it out and sort of see if I like can remember the tune, the melody of these words.
I have spoken to like the Connecticut Songwriters Association back years ago, back in the early 80s, and they want to know song crafting. And I said, look, the thing you do for me that works for me is turn on, in the old days, cassette. Turn on your cassette player, play. Throw anything at it. Even, you know, don't edit anything. Just let your self-conscious mind come to. I mean, I wrote a silly song. I was driving in a car. Is my self-conscious mind working overtime? How can I relate my name in such a state? And I started naming all the states of the union. You know, and it's just, you know, crazy stuff. Like, you don't edit anything. Let it all flow out. Words, if you're just mumbling or a funny melody, or just throw it all out there, edit later.
Yeah,
you don't want to stop that flow. Most of those great songs for me, the songs that I've really enjoyed writing, I've written while I'm driving, because I found out you're driving, you can be driving thinking about something, you realize I don't remember driving the past 10 miles.
Yeah,
because your part of your brain takes over the mechanics of driving the car, watching the road. The subconsciousness comes right up to the surface, like, and when you're sitting at home in front of and at a desk with a pad and pencil, it's not there. But when you're driving, for me, when I'm driving, that subconscious mind comes up, and it just flows. And anything, I would just turn my tape recorder on in the car. I had a little mini cassette player, the little ones I'd hold in my hand. And I would just be driving with one arm and talking and singing into the sink. Any thought, I keep a pad and pencil by my bed. Any thought that comes through, I get up in the middle of the night, write it down. Next morning, going, what the heck was that? You know, yeah. And it, for some reason, I was dreaming something. It's just started out funny. And that's how Existential Blues. I woke up at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning to get up to go to school to be a teacher. And stuff just started flowing. All the frustration, and I just wrote it down. And I was writing it and singing, talking into my tape recorder. Got to school. The kids became the Munchkins. By the end of the day, I had three verses, and I just said, "Well, existentially speaking, this doesn't exist. I'm not here. You're not here. There's no beautiful downtown Waterbury where I performed it. And so, thank you very much. Good night." Got a standing O. I said, there's something about this song.
Yeah, there sure was.
I had no intention to be a comedian, and I still don't consider myself a comedian. I have a lot of fun songs and parody songs I've done over the years, and I like to tell a story that may lead into a song, and that's just trying to make that connection. You know?
Yeah. Well, humor is so important to entertainment. So if you're already entertaining people with music, bringing in that comedy is going to heighten that entertainment vastly.
Yeah, well, we have a thing where we do with the elderly brothers, that duo, or we'll be at a senior center. And I said, do you remember going to your first dance? Remember how scary that was? I said, you're dancing like this. I said, because I said, I never touched a girl. I hugged and kissed my grandma, but I never touched a girl. And you're dancing like this. And I said, but this girl, she was at a parochial school. And I says, she took my hands and put them around her waist, and I'm dancing like this. And then we got so close, her cheek was brushed against my cheek, that we're dancing like this. And I said, and then out of the corner of my right eye came a black and white tornado, sister meaning with something or other, with a 12-foot ruler, who separated us and said, boys and girls, you can dance, but you have to leave room for the Holy Ghost. I said, then you go back to dancing like this. And then we go into a slow number from the 50s or whatever, a doo-wop song. And it's so all BS stories, all fun. But it's just, I love to have little comedy bits that lead into a song. And that's how we do it for anybody who wants to see the elderly brothers right now. Go to my friend Brian Gillie, B-R-I-A-N Gillie, G-I-L-L-I-E.com, and click on the elderly brothers. Scroll down, you'll see live videos of what we do. So, you know, that's it. But he's interested. So,
and if you're in the East Coast, the Northeast Coast, that's right. That's where you are, right?
I'm from Connecticut. That's where I'm at. Yeah.
So if anybody listening or watching is in that neighborhood, go to a live show. Maybe you're a senior citizen at one of the.
There you go.
Homes. Yeah.
We have cougars in their 80s wearing poodle skirts chasing us around. So my wife's secure. She said, just go make the money and bring it home. What are you gonna say?
Well, we have one more word for this episode, and I'm realizing it has one long definition, which I think I didn't even realize that before. And can you please make the final sound effect for this episode? Whatever you want to do.
Okay. Well, how about this?
Poppings. I love it.
The Zoom did this really. I could hear the guitar, but it made it sound like almost robotic or alien or something. It was kind of a cool effect, actually. Yeah. So you'll hear it later. It was cool. And then I heard the poppies, of course.
I can't tell you because it's a trade secret. No.
Yeah. No. I don't want to know. You know, a magician never reveals his secrets.
Okay. Well, here we go with the very last word, which is, of course, existentialism. And right off the bat, I'm just going to say, I'll put a link in the show notes for existentialism because this is a fascinating topic. This is a noun from 1941. Get ready for this definition. It is a chiefly 20th century philosophical movement embracing diverse doctrines, but centering on analysis of individual existence in an unfathomable universe and the plight of the individual who must assume ultimate responsibility for acts of free will without any certain knowledge of what is right or wrong or good or bad.
I mean, that's it right there.
Yeah. Well, you got Jean-Paul Sartre and you got Friedrich Nietzsche and these guys, you know, the whole thing of what's good, what's bad, you know, it's all relative.
Yeah.
People have no moral compass these days. Everything is relative. And so what's good for me is bad for you, but it doesn't matter because it's me. And it's very self-centered. And I think that's the sad part about existentialism is that individual, I think I was brought up to be an individual. That's my father said, never follow the crowd, be your own man. And I say that to my own son. You know, these guys took it to a whole another level of, you know, and that's a breakdown of society when you just become just me, just all yourself. And that's my own world. I create my own world and the heck with everybody else. And it's very self-centered. And I think that's sad. But
yeah, there's a fine line.
That's my take on it.
Right. Yeah. There's a fine line between, you know, taking care of yourself and being an individual and also being really selfish and narcissistic. So, what, oh, I like what you said about how it's all relative. I've mentioned this on the show before. You know, there's the phrase of like the nemesis, the antagonist in a story is the hero in their own story. You know, usually they're not necessarily doing something that they think is evil. They think they're doing something that's good. Or I think a really good antagonist is like, well, if you see it from their point of view, if you can be empathetic to what their life situation is like, you realize, oh, well, I get why they are behaving that way. Even though we see them as the bad guy, you know, they don't see it that way. So yeah, it's all relative. It's what's good, what's bad. It's a very complicated world, and you know, it's fascinating to really break your brain on some of these topics, the existentialism, the existential questions, the existential blues will definitely break your brain in a really good way. I'm very pleased that you were able to do this. We were able to throw this together relatively quickly. The one last thing that we do here on this show is we pick a word of the episode. So I will quickly just reread the words, all 12 of them, and then you, as the guest, will get to pick a word of the episode. Do you think you can handle that?
I'm going to try. I'm going to try.
I have faith. I have faith. Here we go. We had exigent, exiguity, exiguous, exile, how do you say this word? Eximius, exine, exist, existence, existent, existential, and existentialism. What do you pick as the word of the episode?
Well, you know, U.S. You ask so many questions. What answers should I choose? Is this Plato's heebie-jeebies or just existential blues? I'd have to say existential.
Existential is, of course, the word of the episode. Thank you very much. I'm sorry that Zoom wasn't behaving with your sounds in your guitar.
This is great. But
we got the picture. And obviously, I will put a link in the show notes also for your song. Is there a specific like version on YouTube or online somewhere that you know is like, oh, this is the good one that people should check out?
I think if you go to just punch in Tom T-Bone Stankus Existential Blues, you're probably going to see, I'm always in a Hawaiian shirt. You're probably going to see me in a turquoise Hawaiian shirt with a long mullet. And that's circa 1985. I think I was about, maybe 35 years old. And that was at Cayuga Community College up in Auburn, New York. And that was probably the one you saw. We did a lot of stuff there.
I watched a couple. That's the first one that pops up on YouTube. It's from James Stanton uploaded it.
He was a young student who headed up the VA department there.
Oh, very cool. I love that. That one's got 77,000 views right now. There is another one that looks like let's see. This could be the recorded version. It says full version from a couple of years ago, so there's no live portion. There's a few other live versions. One, I think you're wearing kind of an orange shirt.
I was going to say a red shirt. Yeah, that's the same school. And every year I would go there, they would videotape me performing at their coffee house. So
there's what you're telling me is that there's a lot more video out there of this show, but it's just not available to the public.
Well, there's other songs. I mean, there's other. Yeah. If you click on that song, you may scroll or look to the side and you're going to see other videos of other songs, you know, whether it's a Jimmy Buffett song or whatever. There's other songs that I have there recorded. So, yeah, check it out. There's one we'll link to the other and they all somehow exist together.
Oh, yes, yes. In this really weird internet world. Yes, please go check out the song, but also please go check out the rest of T-Bone's work in a couple of months from the time we're recording this on April 30th. Maybe there will be a website up and running where you can download, buy his music.
Look for TomTBoneStankus.com, I guess is what we're going to, you know. And I want to encourage all the folks tuning in today. This is kind of fun. If you're a wordsmith or nerdy like my buddy here and I, Spencer and I, who love to play with words. Keep tuning in because he's going to have some other guests and some really wild, wild new words that may stretch your imagination. So keep up the great work there, Spencer.
Always. Thank you so much
for letting me be a part of it today. It's been a lot of fun.
Of course. Very, very glad to talk to you and to have you on my show. I hope hope this isn't the end. Hope we get to talk again. I will reach out to maybe getting one of those 45s. We'll see what we can make work with that. And until next time, this is Spencer Dispensing Information. Goodbye.
How Did This Not Get Made is a podcast all about the films and TV shows that never got made. In this podcast, we uncover the history of these intellectual properties and walk you through the plot of these unmade scripts to determine if they would have been great or awful. Here's just a few other titles that we've covered. The Beatles' Lord of the Rings, James Cameron's Spider-Man, Guillermo del Toro's Haunted Mansion, Star Wars' Duel of the Fates, Superman Lives starring Nicolas Cage, James Gunn's R-rated Scooby-Doo, and Alejandro Jodorowsky's Dune, just to name a few. Episodes of How Did This Not Get Made can be found wherever you get your podcasts.